ain't heard about Moto Casino? Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto. I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps. In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino. Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free-to-play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today. Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. Social casino.
COTA has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at COTA.com/service changes. That's COTA.com/service changes.
And welcome to another episode of Gopher Gridiron Radio. I'm Luke Buer.
And I am GopherIllustrated.com publisher Ryan Burns. And we welcome you guys back to this edition of a breakdown where we are going to vent together. We're going to work through our issues together. We're going to try to figure out this Gopher defense and why it is an absolute dumpster fire. So welcome to the rock bottom edition of this Gopher 2018 team. And before we get into it and introduce our special guest, Luke, would you like to give the folks a word from our sponsor?
Yeah, so if you aren't aware, we are sponsored this season by the Goal Line Club. We want to thank them for their contributions to making Gopher Gridiron Radio possible. If you're interested in the Goal Line Club, I encourage you to go check out their website at goalineclub.org.
So, as always, now that he is back, he's back on the map after a one-week hiatus. My cousin, my second cousin, former Golden Gopher offensive lineman Derek Burns is back with us to help break down what, as I said, I think is the rock bottom point, hopefully, of this 2018 season. Derek, how are things for you on the therapeutic Davenport love that we like to call Gopher Gridiron Radio?
I'm doing very well, guys. I appreciate you having me back. And believe it or not, I'm looking forward to it, actually. It's venting helps, but I also look forward to taking a look at what went wrong and what adjustments can be made in the future. And I always love talking college football, so glad to be back with you guys.
All right. I think that we'll just start right where we should and where everybody's basically talking right now, defensively. This has been pretty rough Big Ten slate for the Gopher defense. Rob Smith, probably rightfully so, has received a lot of heat. So I guess, Derek, I want to start with you. This is going to be a long-winded question, so bear with me. We looked at a Jay Sovell, Tracy Clay's defense. Schematically, they said, we're going to play wide nine, press man. They're going to dare you to beat you deep, but we're going to stop the run, right? And they did. They gave up a decent number of big plays, but that was partially due to the scheme. Now we look at a team under Rob Smith. They're playing zone coverage. They're given 10 yards of cushion, but they consistently are giving up big plays, especially in Big Ten play, and they have been inconsistently been able to stop the run. So, straight up, what's going on here? Why can they just seemingly stop no one at this juncture?
Well, I think maybe just to start with the kind of the game plan and scheme that I believe the coaches are using, and we can start there, and there's some other things to break down, but it's my opinion that I believe the coaches feel that they're very thin at the safety position specifically in the secondary overall. So I believe they're trying to put together a game plan that takes the pressure off the safeties in both run and the pass. So what they're doing is giving that, whether it's zone or man coverage, they're giving that deep cushion on the outside so that the safeties aren't having to defend the field sideline to sideline in the pass if anybody gets beat in press coverage. And they're not having to come up and defend the run as quickly. They can play the middle of the field. They can read and react. And so that's what I think is happening schematically. Now, couple of ways that they're getting hurt by that is obviously the pitch and catch that's going on the outside. So if it's soft man coverage, they're able to throw the out, they're able to throw a stop route on the outside. And if it's a soft zone, they're able to take the slot or the H-back or the running back and just run them out in the flat in that soft spot of the zone again for another pitch and catch. And so that's what's really hurting them in the past game, among other things, but predominantly that's where the offenses are game planning to attack that. And then I think what's happening in the run game is that soft coverage is allowing, specifically on Saturday, allowing those wide receivers and tight ends and H-backs to get downfield, specifically on Saturday with crackback blocks, and get blocks on those secondaries to get guys downfield. And that's where you're seeing some of these big runs open up, because your secondary is having to react and they're getting downfield. They're getting those blocks downfield, and it's ending up being big plays. So they're trying to compensate for what they believe is a weakness, but like it's the game of football. So both coordinators they're paid to exploit that, and they're paid to react. And so they're reacting to what the Gophers are doing on defense, and they're ending up attacking that, what ends up being the second weakness.
You mentioned this is a game of two teams, two different coordinators battling against one another. I'm not sure it's been really a battle for opposing offensive coordinators here in recent weeks. And you look at what Nebraska's game plan was, and they executed it to a T, that they knew Minnesota's corners were going to be 8 yards off. They knew Minnesota's safeties were going to be 12 yards off. And they knew that the play side linebacker, which more times than not happened to be Kamal Martin, had a tendency to not be where he's supposed to be. So what did this Nebraska team do? This Nebraska team ran to the edges. This Nebraska team would just throw four-yard hitches, four-yard outs, because Minnesota's defensive scheme refuses to adjust. And here we are 650 yards later, 53 points later, multiple broken coverages later, 10 more chunk plays later. And I think the biggest issue that I think all three of us can agree on is, where is the adjustment? Because you look at each one of these Big Ten games, it's been gashed by a different reason, gashed by a different play, gashed by the pass, gashed by the run. In four Big Ten games, this Gopher defense has given up 34 chunk plays. That's 34 different plays of 15 yards or more. They give up seven against Maryland, 8 against Iowa, 9 against Ohio State. And they hit double digits on Saturday against Nebraska in 10. The issue is, it's not just one area that they're really failing in. They're failing everywhere. They have, I believe, 14 chunk plays against them on the ground. It would be more, except Maryland and Nebraska were able to get home in terms of really get home to these touchdowns. They've given up 20 different chunk plays in the last four games via the pass. It's a lack of adjustment. And that's the whole disheartening part. Now, it's clear that Minnesota's safety spot, not named Jacob Huff, has been just, I think, brutal, be putting it kindly. Now, it's not exactly fair for Antonio Chenault to be placed back there, considering he wasn't a great coverage corner, in my opinion. Wasn't a great, he certainly wasn't good against the run. But you look at the first two touchdowns on Saturday, and I believe that Chenault was knocked out with an injury. I believe it was a concussion. He's in the concussion protocol, but it's not in his where he's supposed to be. He's getting blocked. Here we are 14 points later. Jordan Howden, a true freshman, is inserted. He's not ready to play. And now they're off to the races. I mean, you can look at the secondary scandal that Fleck walked into, where he doesn't have Dior Johnson, Keontae Harden, Ray Buford. Yeah, that's not great. But he also had Ken Handy Hawley and Adam Beck that he signed in that first recruiting class. And neither one of those guys are here anymore. And so how do you fix safety? Because Jacob Huff is having to do a whole lot, and he's not – the number of chase down tackles that Jacob Huff's had to make because he has to come across the field there is just – it's astounding, especially when you look at that Nebraska tape. So I guess I'll pose the question to you, Derek, is the thing that has me rubbing my temples down to the nubs is I just can't understand why Minnesota never at really any point during this Nebraska game adjusted the way that they were playing off coverage, because Nebraska's game plan played into that to a T, whether it was in the run game or the pass game. I mentioned the pass game, the four-yard hitches, the four-yard outs, the slants to where they were wide open. It was a game of easy pitch and catch for Adrian Martinez and J.D. Spielman or Stanley Morgan. And then in the run game, you look at these – oh, I mean, if you somehow want to go back and watch that game, which Derek and I know we have, and Luke, you obviously watched it live, it ain't any prettier a second time around. And you're watching that the schemes that this Nebraska offense drew up were exactly in what Minnesota thought they were going to be. And Minnesota never adjusted, and that's how you get 650 yards. So I guess, Derek, I understand that Minnesota doesn't have the secondary personnel that they want. They're trying to keep everything in front of them, playing off coverage, trying not to get beat deep. But they're getting beat everywhere, and I think that's the biggest thing for folks right now is, I know there's the big fire Rob Smith crowd right now, but I don't think you're going to get your wish here anytime soon unless, I mean, this defense really falls off the wagon the next 2 weeks, but I digress. How does this defense just not adjust in with the secondary and the off coverage? Let's start with there.
Sure. Well, it's frustrating. The game on Saturday especially, I don't want to put too much emphasis on the wind conditions, but I bring it up only I wasn't at the game, so I can't speak to it in person, but I only bring it up because if you look at the way the two teams were playing, Nebraska on defense played almost exclusively in press coverage on the outside. They used one or two safeties, most of the time two safeties, and my thought was, and I could be wrong, but my thought was they were trying to force Minnesota to throw the ball up in the air and downfield, especially in the windy conditions. And so I felt anyway that they used that to their advantage, took away some of the short game. Minnesota still had success in some RPOs on offense, which we'll get to later. That's kind of been their go-to. But by and large, Nebraska challenged the Gopher wide receivers on the outside of the press coverage, and I think it benefited them. Now, on the other side, to get to your point, it was frustrating that the Gophers didn't feel or didn't have the confidence to do that. And so if you're playing in a game where you think the wind is a factor, Nebraska is more than happy to throw into the flat and throw pitch and catch because you're keeping that ball down. You're still able to move it around the field. You're able to play the lateral game. And so it really played into their hands. And so it'll be interesting moving forward. They didn't make the adjustment on Saturday. And the only thing I can keep going back to is that they didn't have the confidence to play press coverage against some of those players. And so they didn't make the adjustment on Saturday. It's going to be interesting moving forward to see if that comes back and to see if they make those adjustments and be a little bit more aggressive. As we keep talking here, we can talk about some of the suggestions going forward that maybe some things they can do even with the personnel that they have, but I don't have a good answer for you on Saturday as to why they didn't make the adjustment other than just not wanting to put those safeties in a position to defend the passes all game.
Well, the issue is, and I keep coming back to it, is, I mean, you look at the two touchdowns in the day, the two big plays for Stanley Morgan. Morgan tries, you know, he's faking like he's running a flag route, going to the front pylon. Yet he comes back towards Jordan Howden, gets turned around, touchdown. They go play action. Every member of the Gopher secondary sucks in. Stanley Morgan has the easiest 60-plus yard touchdown of his entire life. He's on. No one even paid any attention to him. So I think it comes back down to, I mean, this is the second consecutive, you know, seemingly the fourth consecutive week where it's like, what are these guys seeing in practice where we continue to have these gaffes, these mental breakdowns that these guys don't look adequately prepared to what is actually being run on the field on Saturday. Now, Luke, I'll throw that one to you. Am I the only one that's seeing that? Is you have this core personnel on defense. You look at the Ohio State game, 9 of the 11 starters are upperclassmen, and the only underclassman starter is Coney Durr, and I believe he's of legal drinking age by now. And then you look at this Nebraska game, 9 of the 11 starters our upperclassmen, Terrell Smith's back in, Coney Durr is still out there. I don't understand why this defense looks like they're seeing things for the first time when I don't believe that these plays that they're seeing are too complex.
You know, it's kind of mind-boggling, really. Just looking at this Nebraska game, you look at a team, and not the Nebraska, I mean, I think they're better than their record, but when you look at a team that's been as efficient as they were in this game, you know, 25 for 30 through the air for an average of 9.2 yards per pass, on, you know, 43 rushing attempts, they average 8.9 yards. Ryan, to your point, many, many chunk plays. To me, that speaks of a team that either is coming in unprepared, or simply that lacks talent. And now I'll pose the question to you, Ryan. Does this team actually lack talent? I think that Nebraska has a plethora of great athletes. Don't get me wrong. I think they're going to be a very talented team, and I'm actually kind of fearful of what they can be in the future under Scott Frost. But that said, is this defense lacking talent? Because I'm not sure they are, because I've seen a lot of these players play on one heck of a defensive squad that was manned under Jay Sovell.
I mean, isn't that the question? Is, you know, does Minnesota have the talent? I think so.
I think we've
seen it play well. And maybe we keep drawing back to that 2016 bowl game too much.
Where
Blake Cashman played out of his mind. Thomas Barber played well. Kamal Martin played well. Coney Dura played well. Jacob Huff played well. But why are we talking about it 2 years later? It's because it's almost like they've regressed. And that's not a positive step. Now, I think that Minnesota has talented players in their linebacking core. I'm very, very suspect on their defensive line, not named Carter Coughlin, because all Carter Coughlin continues to do is be a one-man wrecking crew. I think he should have had two sacks in the day, considering the roughing the passer call. No, was it roughing the passer? It was
intentional grounding.
They gave it to Delighty Boudere. Carter was right there. So I guess, cool, Minnesota got another sack. But it's like in the secondary. You look at these are all Keandre Thomas, Coney Durr, Jacob Huff. You know, Terrell Smith, I think, is a talented player as well. Why haven't we seen the development? Because it's clear that, and PJ Fleck addressed it afterwards in the postgame press conference he said it as coach speak as he could, that we know that they're trying to pick on a couple players and they're having success doing it. So if you know that this is what they're doing, and AKA they're picking on that safety spot, and then what Nebraska did was they picked on Kamal Martin, play after play after play after play. Why aren't we seeing adjustments? Why aren't we seeing development? And I think that's the biggest issue and the biggest thing with, I think, every Gopher fan's frustration is, you look back at Big Ten play with Rob Smith, why isn't this defense performing? Now, maybe it is you don't have the personnel in yet. Okay, well, this is the personnel you have. And Luke, we've talked for years on this podcast about you fit the scheme to the players, and you don't fit the players to the scheme.
You don't have time.
Look at the offensive side of the ball. I mean, you have freshmen running around everywhere. You still put up nearly 500 yards of total offense, 28 points. We'll get to the offensive side of the ball. You can see the promise. You can see the growth. You can see that this offensive line, I think, is coming together and has been shored up with Daniel Fa'alele in there now for his second consecutive week. You can see that Rodney Smith and Shannon Brooks will be your two main backs next year, and this offense is going to take off, in my opinion anyway. And so what we keep coming back down to is this defense. Where is the promise? Where is the hope? Where is the you can draw back on this? You know, we're great at stopping the run. We're great at defending the pass. You're not great at anything right now, and it's with a bunch of juniors and seniors out there. And that's where it's like, is this going to get worse as before it's going to get better? And I don't know that Fleck has the time for it to get worse. Mm-hmm. Now, they're trying to address it in recruiting with two defensive tackles on the junior college side of things. They have like 7 D-line commits. They are well aware that they need help for Carter Coughlin. But the issue is, these are all guys that are going to be playing in their first Division I collegiate games. I don't know, Luke, and that's the big question, and that's the one I'm going to have to think about and how to phrase it to PJ on Tuesday, and what to ask Rob Smith on Wednesday is, where do you go from here, Rob? Where do you go? Because, like I said, Indiana's coming to town Friday night, 7 p.m. This is an Indiana offense that's been scoring points. Now, Indiana's on a 3-game losing streak because they played Ohio State, Iowa, and Penn State. This is a competent offense. And if you have a competent Big Ten offense and you're playing this Gopher defense, well, I hope you started them in fantasy football because they've been going off. Now, Derek, am I alone with that assessment on the linebackers where we've seen these linebackers play well as recently as September, but here we are approaching the end of October, and Kamal Martin was just picked on all day long in terms of he'd jump inside on run plays, and this is where Nebraska would have their slot tight end or their slot receiver just come down and crack block him because they knew that Kamal's eyes were going into the backfield, and then the running back would just bounce it outside. Kamal would try to go outside, and he's met with the force of a 230-pound or 265-pound tight end. There's no one on the edge because, hey, the corner out there is 10 yards off the line of scrimmage, so the wide receiver is able to get vertical on him, and then it's Jordan Howden in space trying to make a one-on-one, or Coney Durr in space trying to make a one-on-one, and this defense just isn't making plays. This defense is not in their gaps. This defense has missed assignments, and most importantly, this defense is not tackling well. So at the linebacker spot, is that what you saw when you went back and you watched the tape? Was it seemingly the idea from this Nebraska team was, let's pick on Kamal Martin, and I think they executed that well.
Yeah, I think that for the front seven on defense, they had a lot of the same mistakes they had in the Maryland game. Nebraska runs an offensive scheme. They run a lot of full blocks, full blocking up front, and misdirection. They don't run quite as much jet sweep as Maryland does, but the idea is the same in that at the snap of the ball, they're usually given three options in the running game. There's usually an inside zone handoff. There's some sort of misdirection going the other way, and there's usually a bubble screen or an out route of some type. So they're forcing you to defend the entire field and defend every gap, and they're going to take advantage if you don't. The disappointing thing was, much like the Maryland game, I felt that the front seven on Gophers defense was not fundamentally sound. And that is reading your blocking keys, reading the formation keys, and then post-snap, defending your gap. Many times you could just see as you went back and watched the film, guys were looking in the backfield trying to determine who had the ball, whether it was handed off, whether it was a keep, whether it was a pass. They've got to simplify things and go back to base fundamentals so that they're fundamentally sound. And if they're going to get beat sometimes and they have some shortage personnel wise, I think they can live with that. But up front, it was a lot of misreads up front. So again, similar to the Maryland game, and I think that put them out of position, which then leads to poor tackling. When you're out of your gap and out of position, you're having to dive in ankles, and you're going to end up with a poor tackling day, and that's going to turn short gains into long gains and long gains into touchdowns.
Now, Luke, on the day, Adrian Martinez. I mean, the man was a one-man wrecking crew. Is Adrian Martinez going to be a very special player for that Husker team for the next 4 years? Absolutely. I mean, he's very dynamic in the run game. 15 carries. We talked about this on this preview. I talked about it in my Gopher Illustrated preview that Adrian Martinez is averaging 15 carries. How many did he have on Saturday, Luke? He had 15 carries. The issue is 15 carries went for 125 yards. Nebraska had three different 100-yard rushers, but Adrian Martinez alone counted for 400-plus total yards, four touchdowns. And it's like, where was the pressure? You know, where was the, you know, now some of that is because all Adrian Martinez had to do was throw four-yard hitches, four-yard outs, five-yard slants, 10-yard posts, because Minnesota refuses to play press man. And, if they're going to get beat, damn it, they're going to get beat. That's not this offense, and that's not this defense. So does Adrian Martinez, is this Nebraska team offensively very stout? Yes. Minnesota's offense, on the other hand, still almost put up 500 yards of total offense, but with this defense, it's like this was the first time that Minnesota saw a running quarterback. But once again, the missed tackles, I think the play that I talked about with Derek in the pre-production meeting, it was so disheartening, was I believe it was on one of Adrian Martinez's long runs. I believe it was just read option. And the issue is three linebackers and a safety all went with the running back.
You might want to cover Adrian Martinez. Sources tell me he's pretty good with his legs.
how do you have four guys go with the running back and no one goes with the quarterback? And that's what I keep coming back to, Luke, is what are these guys seeing in practice that we get to the games and it's like, whoa, oh boy, I don't know. I don't know what I'm reading here. It's just a lot of guys playing slow, but Adrian Martinez in that short passing game, he's 25 of 29 for 276 yards, three scores and no picks. I guess the silver lining, Luke, is this defense did, quote unquote, force a turnover, their first road turnover in three games when Adrian Martinez and I believe it was Mo Washington screwed up the mesh point. But it's another game. It's the third straight game, Luke, where the opposing quarterback has been able to torch this Gopher defense.
Yeah, it's befuddling to say the least. I think in the case, I mean, this was the first probably, yeah, I'd say this was the first time, I think we noted this on the preview, that they went up against a more dual threat quarterback, right? And that obviously didn't bode well for them. And, you know, at the end of the day, they're really just not stopping anyone. It's just the fact of the matter. And you're not going to win. I don't know many teams in college football, and especially in the Big Ten, they're going to win, basically just outscore people a la like Chip Kelly at Oregon, right? You know, you can't give up 50-some points or 40-some that they're averaging in Big Ten play and expect to win. One question I have left, Derek, for you defensively before maybe we can move on to offense. Defensive line. I think that the staff, you know, not given or maybe asked behind closed doors is going to tell you that they don't have the personnel they want to run whatever scheme they have. But what do you see out of this defensive front? I know that Carter Coughlin, he's looked good, but outside of that, everything's a giant question mark there. You know, what do you see that they either need to improve on? Is it that can include an influx of talent, right? That they just need to start recruiting that position better. But Derek, what are you seeing there on that defensive line in particular?
Well, if you break it down and run and pass, I think in run defense, when they have the run package in, I think the guys on the inside are doing okay. They're not to the level of being able to make plays. So I guess, you know, gap stuffers, eating up blockers. And I think that's what they're asked to do. And I think that for the most part, they're able to do that. If you look at, especially against a downhill running team like Iowa, again, pretty good against Ohio State, the straight ahead running, I think they're holding their own there. I don't think they're at a level talent wise where they're in the tackle for loss. You were talking about things like that, talking about getting sacks out of those interior guys. But against the run, I think they're, I guess, doing their job for lack of a better explanation. In the past, I just don't think that other than Carter Coughlin, they're getting much out of the pass rush as we've kind of beat to death here. They're not going to pressure with blitz very often, and they're never going to do anything like a jailbreak blitz because that puts them on island man coverage in the secondary, which is what they're refused to do. So they're asking those front four to get pressure, and Carter Coughlin's able to do that, and we've talked about that. But the other pass rushers are not getting home, and so I think every team would like this, but if you're able to get more pressure out of a three or four man rush besides Carter Coughlin, that helps you everywhere else. But they're not there, I don't think, talent wise. So again, run, I don't think they're getting blown off the ball for the most part. In the run game, I think when they put in the run package, they want to stop the run up the middle. I think they're good enough, but just maybe a lack of playmakers. And then on the outside, I think they're just a little light, you know, defensive end outside position. I just don't think they have the physical bodies out there to be an anchor on the outside, which I think contributes to some of those breaking contain and some of those outside running games. They just don't have those anchor ends, to hold things down on the outside.
I think you look at this defensive line for as well as I thought Asezi Owatumu played against Ohio State. I thought he took a step back against Nebraska because that was essentially the game plan, was let's run away from Carter Coughlin. Let's run away from Blake Cashman on that same side that Carter plays. Let's go against Winston. Let's go against Asezi. Let's go against Kamal. And they had success doing it. And once again, it's like, what did Minnesota do to adjust? So before we spend this entire podcast just talking about how atrocious this Gopher defense has been, I guess, what are our solutions to fix it? Because I think the thing at the top of my list would be, I just want to see something different. Because I've seen the last 3 weeks, Minnesota is going to play. Well, I'm trying. I don't remember the Maryland game quite as well as I do the Iowa.
It's four, man. It's all a Big Ten play. They've been atrocious on defense.
Well, I'm talking about just they've for the last 3 weeks anyway. They've been playing a lot of off coverage, trying to keep everything in front of them, refusing to play press man, refusing to really get pressure, and that's how you've seen. That's how Nathan Stanley throws for 300 yards, four touchdowns. That's how Dwayne Haskins throws for 400 yards and three touchdowns. That's how Adrian Martinez goes for 275 yards and three touchdowns. I just want to see a defensive staff that if you're not going to do anything with the defensive coordinator, it's your decision, PJ, and you're going to either ride or die with the ship there. But I want to see him make adjustments. And that's been my biggest thing that has me so worked up is where is the adjustments? You're not making any. Nebraska had a game plan. They executed it in the first quarter. It was 21-0. They didn't make adjustments the rest of the game to what I thought they should have. You know, I'd love to see them try to play some press man. You know, if you get beat, damn it, so be it. But at least you're getting beat in a different way so that folks on Friday night, if it's 10-0 Indiana after 6 minutes, it is going to be very, very negative in TCF Bank Stadium very, very quickly. So I'd like to see some different looks. Maybe you play Ray Estes finally, because it's clear that what you're throwing out there in the secondary isn't working. Whether it's Chris Williamson, Coney Dirk, Keandre Thomas, I mean, anybody not named Jacob Huff, I don't think is playing tremendously well right now. That maybe Terrell Smith is playing well as well. But I'm so tired of the off coverage. I'm so tired of these linebackers looking out of sorts. I'm tired of the lack of adjustments. So if that's my biggest thing for what is your solution to fix this defense, show me that you're willing to make adjustments, Rob Smith. Show me that you're willing to try something different. Maybe it's going to be better. Maybe it's going to be worse. But to do the same thing over and over again and expect different results is just asinine. So, Derek, what do you think? And then, Luke, I mean, give us your thoughts, and then let's go to the offensive side of the ball.
Well, I think that what I believe what the coaches will focus on this week, and I think they should, is to simplify things on defense and dial up the aggressiveness. I think one easy thing they can do with the personnel that they have that doesn't involve huge overhauls is to simplify the game plan. They've already talked about how short they are personnel-wise. That maybe is going to cut down on their packages. Fine. Cut down on your packages. Cut down on some of the blitzes and schemes that you're running. Make it simple for these guys. Go back to base fundamentals and bring back the aggressiveness. You guys that have played football or coached football or been around, the cliche is that if you're focusing on seven things on every play, it takes away your aggressiveness. You know, if you have two keys and that's all you have to think about, you can be aggressive because you're not having to overthink. And I know that's a cliche and people roll their eyes when they hear it, but it's true. So I think that's one thing they can do going forward is to simplify things, focus on being aggressive on defense. Another cliche to throw out there is if you're going to make a mistake, make it going full speed. And then I do agree, Ryan, I do think they're going to have to take some chances. And you know what? Do it going eyes wide open. You know, if it involves running a little more press coverage or running a couple of jailbreak blitzes, just make it calculated. You don't have to do it 30 times, but maybe you mix it in 6, 7, 10 times throughout the course of the game, you know, which is up from zero. So I'd like to see him focus on those things, bring back some aggressiveness, and take a little less read and react and catching blocks and get these guys coming downhill.
Yeah. You know, I think the interesting thing that we'll probably talk about in more detail, I think this is going to be the defining, or defense is going to really define PJ Fleck's time here, right? It's obvious that, you know, offense is his bread and butter. He played wide receiver. He made it to the NFL as a wide receiver. He was on the offensive side, throughout his positional coaching career. And we're seeing the progress there. I think at the end of the day, what's going to probably make or break his tenure here at Minnesota is, can he find someone, whether that's Rob Smith and they get the right talent, or they find someone else to bring in to replace him. He needs someone that can basically call out defense, because right now I don't know what the interactions are like in the coach's office, but my assumption is that there's some autonomy there for that defensive staff, because right now their stubbornness is proving that they're not making adjustments, and we're seeing it. I think at the end of the day, I kill this to the absolute 10th degree, but you have to fit your scheme to players in college football, in even in pro football. You don't have the time to turn around and basically have success so that you can get the players you want to ultimately get the success. In the age of social media, etc., people are going to call for your job. I'm not calling for Rob Smith's job right now, but I need to see some sort of change because it's obvious that this kind of defense that you're rolling out, Rob, hasn't worked, man. Like, straight up, it's not working. And if the truth of the matter is you don't have the players, I'm not going to buy that for 1 minute. I'm going to be just completely honest, because yeah, you might be shorthanded some places, but I've seen stuff done with this exact, with a depleted defensive roster that's been really impressive. And maybe it's just a one-off and it's a sample size that I shouldn't refer to, but I'm sick and tired of rotten defense. It's just, maybe I wrongfully became in love with the idea of playing good defense under Killen Clay, something I never saw my entire 10 years ago for fan, but this is just untenable. It's putrid, and we need to make some improvements. So I'll get off my soapbox. We probably should talk about, Ryan, is what the heck happened with Zach Anikstead. Mystery Tanner Morgan comes in the second half, and that was a mystery to many of us until we heard that there's some internal abdominal injury or something to that extent. But maybe you have some insight now that you can shed some light onto that.
That was such a strange deal. Before I talk Anikstead, I will say, for everybody clamoring for Rob Smith's job and you're like, well, who would replace him? The name I would give you would be defensive line coach Joe Rossi, someone that Fleck is very familiar with, someone that was the former defensive coordinator at Rutgers for a few years. But with Zach Anikstead, ain't that still the question today, is what the hell happened? Because listening to and watching PJ's postgame presser, the question was posed, literally, what happened with Zach? Because everybody here will remember, he throws a touchdown pass to Demetrius Douglas. They go into the half. They come out to start the second half. Anikstead never showed up. He was in the ER with a mystery internal injury to his midsection. Now, Fleck said, final play of that drive, that's where he got hurt. Now, I watched that. That was the Demetrius Douglas touchdown. He didn't get hit. I have no idea what this injury is. I would assume it's not anything ruptured, considering he was able to be released and he flew home with the team. But the part that I guess we got to talk about is it's looking like it's going to be Tanner Morgan week come Indiana. And because I don't know how you go from an emergency room visit at halftime in Lincoln to starting a game about 5.5 days later at home. I have no idea how you do that, especially with the way that Tanner Morgan played in that second half. I can't say enough good things about what Tanner did in terms of him being prepared to come in. You know, he could have done a lot of different things, folks. When he found out that Zach was going to be the starter, he stuck around. And this is exactly why you stick around, because you need two quarterbacks in today's age of college football. Look across everywhere, especially at Nebraska. First game of the year for Nebraska, Adrian Martinez goes down, and just 2 days previous, the number two quarterback transferred out. If he would have just stuck around for another 48 hours, it could be, who knows what would have happened. But Tanner Morgan was prepared. I thought he was calm. I thought he was collected. I thought he was decisive. 11 for 16, 214 yards. He has a pick that I don't know that I've ever seen an interception quite like that. Minnesota tries to fit in a slant to Rashad Bateman at the goal line. It deflects off of Bateman's hands, hits the DB in the helmet, and then Daniel Faalele is eviscerating his guy into the nether, and he's pushing his guy 5 yards down the field. The deflected ball off of the DB's helmet then hits another Nebraska guy in the head, and then it deflects back up in the air, and it's an interception. So, I mean, should it have been a touchdown? Maybe. Probably should have been caught. But Tanner Morgan comes in, and I thought he played well. You look at Minnesota's offense on the day, folks. I mean, 28 points. I believe they put up somewhere on 500 total yards. Now, the big thorn in the side, and I guess let's get the negativity out early before we get into the positives that we saw today or saw on Saturday was Derek. Now, some of it is because Minnesota has been playing from 3 touchdowns, behind the last seemingly 4 weeks. But in the last 2 games specifically, you look at Ohio State, you look at Nebraska, Minnesota has 10 different drives into opponent territory that have not resulted in points. That is a big issue. Now, you look at how does that happen? Well, there's been 3 interceptions, 2 missed field goals, a fumble, 2 turnovers on downs, and 2 punts from opponent territory. Now, I'm not a huge proponent of punting from the opponent's 41 when you're already down 3 scores early in the game. I don't really understand the point of it, but it's just a bunch of different ways. So from that stat, I mean, from what you've seen from this Gopher offense, what are the issues that are plaguing this offense that once they cross midfield and before they can get in really field goal range, they're stalling out? So what are the issues that you're seeing, especially once they cross midfield?
Sure. So I think that in the last couple of games, they've taken some shots once they've gotten across midfield, been a little bit riskier, and it hasn't come up for them. They've thrown the ball in a couple of interceptions. And I guess what that tells me is they may not have faith in the ability to run 4 yards at a time and take it in from midfield. They may want to go back and second guess that, and maybe that's something they adjust going forward, taking more of those. But I guess what I so there's part of that. Part of it is that the game script, as you mentioned, a couple of the drives they probably could have gotten field goals, ended up going for it, turning it over on downs. But schematically, it's worth pointing out that when you're driving and you're up against the end zone, you're allowing the defense, they don't have the deep responsibility, so they can clamp down in both the run and the pass. So it's just it is more difficult. So what teams usually do is try and get their best player the ball in different ways. And if you saw on Saturday, what was interesting is they've been moving Tyler Johnson around a lot. I think really credit to the offensive staff and game plan. They've been doing that all year and coming up with more and more creative ways to get him the ball. I'd like to see them do that more in the red zone and more in the scoring end of the field. They lined him up in the backfield to get a linebacker and pass coverage on him. Was able to take advantage of that several times. They're able to hit him on RPOs. It's, again, kind of their bread and butter. I know in the Ohio State game, I believe they did hit him and ended up being a catch and a fumble, but I think they have to go back to that. I think if you look at, all the way up to the NFL, you get on the scoring side of the field and even in the red zone, those teams are finding the way to get the ball in the hands of their best player on offense, because that's going to be the toughest player to defend. So if they don't feel like they can do it 3 yards at a time in the running game, then they have to get creative and save some of those plays for the red zone to get Tyler Johnson the ball in open space.
Now with Tyler Johnson, I know that, folks, I'm as frustrated as anyone watching Tyler Johnson drop the 2 easy ones. And it's the same thing I'll keep talking about with Zach Anixa and Tyler Johnson. I mean, it just hasn't gone from what I've seen on the practice field translating onto Saturdays. Zach Anixa's calling card in fall camp, like I continue to say, was his deep ball. We have yet to see that through hundreds of pass attempts here so far. Tyler Johnson, I can count the number of drop passes on one hand that I saw in a combined, 13 spring practices between spring and fall practices I've seen in the calendar year of 2018. Yet here we are seemingly each week he's dropping the easy ones. Is it frustrating? Yes. Does it have to be cleaned up? Yes. Do I think that the folks in my Twitter mentions thinking Tyler Johnson should be benched and think about what he'd done are just insane? Yes. You have an awful take. It's a terrible take. Tyler Johnson is still a tremendously productive receiver, still very talented. still had 11 catches for 184 yards in the day. I think, Derek, the thing I was impressed with was you saw against Ohio State, Minnesota's game plan, I thought it was executed perfectly with Tyler Johnson, where Minnesota was going to line him up in the slot. The Ohio State defensive backs were going to give them Minnesota secondary treatment, where they weren't going to play press man with him in the slot. They were going to play 12 yards off, and all Minnesota did was J.D. Spielman the heck out of him and throw these eight-yard slants, these posts. And you look at what Minnesota did against Nebraska. Now, they still use Tyler Johnson a lot out of the slot, but you also saw Tyler Johnson line up in the backfield. Now, why did Minnesota do that? They wanted to get him one-on-one matchups with linebackers, and they were able to execute that a couple times for third-down conversions. But I think it comes back to, with Tyler Johnson, when he, you know, when he gets as many targets as he's did, he's going to be productive. But the way that Kirk Ciarrocca has been scheming him to try and get the ball into his hands, I think has been impressive here, especially the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, you look at the target distribution, you know, it was highly skewed in the way of Tyler Johnson. I think that's part of them trying to take advantage of, you know, who they think their best playmaker is. I still think that when you look at this offense, though, you know, the growth, or, you know, what you can be excited about is this receiving core. Demetrius Douglas, kind of, I don't know if it's if I'd call it a coming out party, but he probably had his best game as a college player.
How about Demetrius Douglas appearing out of nowhere after essentially not getting any snaps the last few weeks? He's back into the wide receiver rotation now, apparently. Gets his first collegiate touchdown. So, again, another wrinkle, I guess.
Well, there's that, but also, like, you know, there are some missed opportunities here offensively where they could have had big gains. You know, Anixtead missed Seth Green where on a tunnel screen where he had more real estate than I think Donald Trump owns.
Can we first talk about – I did it, folks. I got into Kirk Ciarrocca's head. I did it. I did it for all of Gopher Twitter. I did it for all of Gopher Nation. We got Seth Green, not one, but two targets. It's a miracle. My arms are straight up in the air. I am praising hallelujah. It is a shocker, Luke, that when Seth Green is targeted, good things happen. He makes a contested catch on a flea flicker. Shocker, the Minnesota's best contested catch winner makes a play when it matters. And then if Anixtead doesn't throw a Donovan McNabb Viking quarterback ground ball there, Seth Green is still running. It's beautifully blocked by the receivers, beautifully blocked by the offensive line getting into space and getting in the way, the tight ends as well. It's just a miracle that Seth Green, when you're targeted in space with the ball in your hands, good things happen, Luke.
Yeah, I mean, and, you know, again, Chris Amon-Bell has an all right game, two catches, 75 yards, a tunnel screen that went for 69. I thought Bateman played okay. You know, they had the one touchdown call back where he absolutely torched a safety. Then again, I know there's a hold, so it's negated, but he had an all right game, two catches, 15 yards. But you can see that the talent is there. I guess where I'm trying to go with this is – In the run game, I know you're down Shannon Brooks. I know you're down Rodney Smith. But, you know, from this pre-production meeting, Derek did tell me that the offensive line blocked really well. But, Derek, I'd like to get your thoughts on this running game, because if you look statistically, I mean, you look at Mo Ibrahim, 18 carries, 49 yards, not that great. Tanner Morgan helped a lot with that speed option, 4 carries for 35 yards. But, you know, it doesn't look on the stat sheet that they blocked it up as well as you know, you might expect the stat sheet to look.
Yeah, I thought the offensive line was maybe the most physical they've been all year, was on Saturday. I thought they played physical against Ohio State as well, but I thought both run and pass. Pass protection was very good. A couple pressures, maybe one sack, but certainly a much improved from earlier in the season. And then in run blocking, I think these guys are really becoming comfortable with the scheme and really focusing on effort. I like the push that they had on Saturday. We can talk a little bit more about Daniel Faalele, who I thought was outstanding, especially week over week comparison from last week. But, you know, Ryan, I know you've been down on the running back position, and in the past few weeks, I guess I haven't agreed with it 100%, or maybe not been as down as you have, but on Saturday, I am in full agreement. I think they needed more out of the running back position on Saturday. Many times I felt like the offensive line got guys blocked up, put it, put him in a situation where with one man to beat, or leaving the running back with one guy to beat, and he's, you know, maybe not a touchdown, but he's having an explosive gain. And they just weren't able to do that. Nebraska was pretty athletic and physical on defense. They did come downhill, but I think that's what you're pointing to, Luke, is good job by the guys up front, but I think a little bit to be desired out of the running back position.
Yeah, the offensive line, they only gave up 2 sacks on the day, and essentially one of them was a covered sack, and I think the second one, the pocket did collapse around him, but only 2 sacks on 36 dropbacks. And that's pretty good. I think that, you know, maybe it is the insertion, or the insertion anyway, of Daniel Faalele into that starting lineup at right tackle, just giving them a more physical prowess, allowing some guys like Blaze Andrews to play more confident with someone like Daniel Faalele by their side. Now, Derek, before I continue any further, I think my favorite play from this entire game was watching Daniel Faalele and Blaze Andrews absolutely pancake their guys near the goal line, and somehow a guy's helmet came off. Do you remember the play specifically?
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, again, how –
for Gopher, go ahead. Well, for Gopher fans that want to – that are into the offensive line play, that like schemes like that, maybe it's few and far between. But for those of you that are, what I would urge you to going forward, when the Gophers get into a Wildcat formation with Green at quarterback, and that is, you know, nine times or 19 times out of 20 going to be a running play, watch the right side of the line. Most of the time they're running inside zone. They will run a counter out of that once in a while, but just watch the push they get on the right side of the line. And keep in mind, the defense knows they're going to run the ball, so they're pinning their ears back, but that's really fun to watch. So if you're watching on television, take your eyes off the ball for a couple plays and you see them getting wildcat, and just watch the right side of the line. If I can, I just want to talk for a second about Daniel Faalele. This was, I thought, a moment on Saturday, without, you know, going into too much hyperbole, where we're seeing glimpses of the potential here is very, very high. It reminds me of those that have listened to the podcast for a few years now, when we first saw the Eric Murrays and the Brian Body Calhouns at corner, and we just had to pause at what those guys did and just, you know, say, let's appreciate this. Let's look at where this is going. This is going to be really good things to happen. I think we're seeing that out of Daniel on the offensive line. I think that was the first of what could be a fantastic career out of him. How much he improved from game to game. And I needed to see him in man pass protection to be convinced that he could be an every down guy at right tackle. And I was really impressed by that. And then the run game was, his aggressiveness was dialed up, because I think he's becoming more comfortable with the play calling and the schemes. And it's going to be really fun to watch, folks. He was incredible on Saturday.
And he's a powerful and athletic young man. And I think I didn't mention it on the breakdown, but Derek, you were the one who brought it up to me and confirmed my thoughts that, I mean, Faalele from game one to game two, in terms of just the way how slow he played, it's not, you know, Daniel Faalele is 6'9", 400 pounds. He's going to be a little slow, but he looked very indecisive, very much in his head. He wasn't playing football. He was thinking. And the way that he was able to make the jump from game one to game two, he played so much quicker, so much more confident, so much more powerful. And that's where you can see the ceiling. I mean, you can see I continue to come back to this, is you can continue to see, like, this offense is going to be something. Especially once they insert Curtis Dunlap in there, you're going to have three very, very powerful individuals in Blaze, Faalele, and Curtis Dunlap. And Dunlap, I think, is the most powerful of them all, and he has the best feet to do it at that guard position. Now, I feel like I'm beating a dead horse. I don't even really want to talk running backs. I think some folks think I have this, you know, anti-Mo Ibrahim stigma, and I'm never going to deviate from that. But I would just love to watch, and maybe I'll get to see that next week if Shannon Brooks is back for Indiana. If Minnesota can have this kind of performance again for the third consecutive week against an Indiana defense that's not very good, let's see what Shannon Brooks gets when he gets an offensive line that blocked the way that Minnesota's did on Saturday. There was just so many times where all you had to do was beat one man, and you didn't beat him. And that's how you get 18 for 49. And again, Minnesota had to air out the ball. And I mean, this is all essentially a moot point talking about the running game. And I think Derek and Luke, you'd agree, because if Minnesota continues to get down double digit points by the end of the first quarter again, you really can't establish the run, because what's the point? You're just going to drain clock.
Yeah.
The defense can't stop anything, and you're in a negative game script. Now, your hope is that at some point in the next five games, the defense can, for at least a quarter, limit the opponent to 0 points. Because if you can, you can start to see what Kirk Ciarrocca in this offense is building, what this offensive line with Brian Callahan and Daniel Faalele is now building, what these skill position players on the outside are building. And, I mean, you look at – we talk about the lack of adjustments on the defensive side of the ball. Well, I think one of the most important things that I saw from Kirk Ciarrocca was you saw him go to the speed option when Tanner came into the game. He has a more mobile quarterback, a kid who's very decisive with what he wants to do. And you, again, that's an adjustment that you see from a coordinator. So with that speed option game, I thought it was very successful. The stats back it up. But Derek, how much of it in your eyes was Nebraska not being ready for the speed option because Zach Anixon hadn't shown a whole lot of it? And how much of it was just Minnesota executing on it?
Well, I think it probably, to be fair, I think it was a little bit more that Nebraska wasn't ready for that. Minnesota hadn't shown that much, if at all. And if you look at the way they were playing inside zone earlier in the game, they didn't have to respect any sort of keep on the weak side, only had to respect the running back cutback. The counter to that is just an RPO pass. So as soon as they saw it handed off or saw that it wasn't a pass, they could crash down inside. And so, yeah, with Tanner in there, they immediately went to a weak side sprint option and took advantage of the numbers they have in the weak side. And I think if the game, you know, had gone on longer or you know, the game script is different, Nebraska is going to be forced to commit another man on that side of the center, which then is going to help your inside zone when you come back and give it on the front side. So it's all a kind of the chess match there, and Minnesota definitely took advantage and kept evolving. And I think they have offensively game over game, keep putting in new wrinkles, new bits and pieces. And they were able to, you know, we've talked about the lack of scoring, but they were able to move the ball up and down the field. And this game get a few more explosive gains than we had seen previously as well.
One positive thing I want to highlight is this game for the Gophers is in Big Ten play, you know, just the single turnover, and really is unfortunate turnover. But this is the best that they've looked as an offense in terms of turning the ball over, you know, just the single interception. But I think the converse to that is they did have 8 penalties for 80 yards, which definitely put them into some tough spots. It took a touchdown away with the hold, which, by the way, Derek, did you think that was a hold?
That's a 50-50. Was it technically a hold? Probably.
Yeah.
I don't know why he held there, considering the play call, the situation, and I guess not the situation, but the play call specifically, where the entire offensive line is rolling left. Mo Ibrahim is there to chip, and Zach Anixed is just going to stay in the pocket way away from it. So even if he does get beat across his face there, Derek, he has to. Yep. And Jared Weiler, he's played a lot of football. He knows Mo Ibrahim's going to come here. Zach Anixed, it's not a sprint out to the left. I don't know why he held there in that specific time and situation. Took a touchdown off the board, and it's unfortunate because I think Weiler has played well. I thought he played well on Saturday. But for him to have his first holding penalty of the year there, it was definitely a killer for Minnesota trying to tie this game up here really early on.
Yeah, that was a really tough blow, and it you know, from a momentum perspective, really through the game, especially early on, like to your point, Ryan, I think that would have tied the game at 7, would have been a nice momentum killer, at least for them. Unfortunately, it did not result into points. I guess the only other thing that I'd be interested in maybe chatting about, maybe a little bit more on Tanner Morgan. I know that the speed option, just his mobility is going to be a factor for defenses to have to prepare for. Curious, Ryan, how that might help this offensive line that has struggled to protect the quarterback, and what we can maybe expect going into like an Indiana game. I'm presuming that he's going to play. I don't have any inside knowledge whatsoever, but assuming that we are going to see Morgan, what we might be able to expect going forward.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a different look. It's something different that the defense has to prepare for, where was Zach Anik said you were going to just sit in the pocket a lot more. You were going to see Minnesota just try to force some things down the field. You were going to see Minnesota do some read option stuff. But Zach Anik says just wasn't going to take it. Now, with Tanner Morgan, you have the speed option. You have the read option. I think Tanner can still adequately make passes. So obviously, the forward pass there. But I'm also, I think the conversation topic would be, now again, I am not expecting Zach Anik to play on Friday night. You don't go from an ER to starting 5.5 days later, especially with the mysterious midsection internal injury, which doesn't sound promising. There's no point to rush back Zach Anik, especially with the way Tanner Morgan played. And say Tanner Morgan comes out on Friday night and plays well, I'm fine going forward with Tanner Morgan. I have no attachment to either one of these guys. If Tanner Morgan is the guy that's making this offense hum right now, especially with the, as we talked about, Daniel Faalele into the starting lineup, you've seen pass protection improve. You've seen the run game improve. This offense as a whole has improved. Now, we've talked about how there's been 10 different possessions the last 2 weeks that haven't resulted in points where Minnesota's ended their drive in opponent territory. You'd like to think that at some point here, you're going to regress to the mean where Minnesota's going to get more and more points. Now, again, you look at some of these where the turnover on downs, well, that's because you're down so many points and there's no point in kicking a field goal. You look at a couple of these interceptions, Minnesota's trying to force big plays because they're down by so much, they know a field goal doesn't matter. That's where I think you can see these point totals coming up here, especially in the next 2 weeks. I wouldn't be surprised at all if it's 28-plus in both games. I would expect it to be something close to that on Friday night if Minnesota's defense can keep their offense in the game, because Indiana's defense isn't great. Minnesota's offense, I think, has been playing well. And especially as Kirk Shiraka continues to learn what his offense does well and what they don't do so well. And I think Kirk knows that if we can get some game changers in here with the way that this offensive line is going to be here for the next 3-4 years. And that's the exciting part, folks, is as down on the defense as we are, I don't know that I've been higher on the ceiling of what this offense could be. Because Blaze Andrews is making plays. Daniel Faalele is making plays. Connor Olson will slide to center next year. You'll insert Curtis Dunlap at guard. You're having these guys for the next 3-4 years, with especially next year specifically, Rodney Smith and Shannon Brooks back there. I mean, I don't know how you can't be excited with a second-year quarterback who's, whether it is Tanner Morgan, whether it is Zach Anikstead, maybe it's Jacob Clark of all people, but you also have Tyler Johnson back for another year. Rashad Bateman back for another year. Chris Ottman-Bell back for another year. Seth Green back for another year. The offense is going to get there. The offense isn't built, as we sit here today, constructed to come back from 21 points every game. They're constructed to where if the game is close and they can continue to ride the run, continue to do some things in play action, that's where they're going to be successful. And we haven't seen the game script that allows them to do that. Now, as I said, the whole point I'm trying to make in all this is, if Tanner Morgan comes out on Friday night, and again, I'm presuming he's going to be the starter and plays well, let's ride Tanner Morgan against Illinois. Let's see what he does against Purdue and Northwestern home games. And what do you have to lose? You don't have really anything to lose. If you have a quarterback that's playing well, leading the offense, let's see where it goes. Now, is that an unpopular opinion, Luke? I don't know.
No, I think at this point, this loss, it doesn't bode well in terms of confidence or like the trajectory of the program. But to me, it's still bowl or bust here, right? I still think that they have to be thinking bowl. They've still got a decent schedule. I know that Purdue knocked off Ohio State, and they're not looking to be maybe.
Can you imagine how many points that this Purdue team?
God, don't even want to think about that.
But you look at still the remaining games. Like Indiana's on a 3-game losing streak. They're coming now on a short week, just as Minnesota's on a short week, CCF Bank Stadium. Illinois is worse than Minnesota right now. Northwestern, I can't figure out because they almost lost to Rutgers. They were losing for a large majority of that game, and Rutgers is just trash. And then Purdue, I don't even want to think about Purdue, but like Indiana and Illinois, you look at the next 2 games ahead of you on the schedule. Tell me a reason why Minnesota can't be at least competitive in it, because I think that's the biggest thing that folks are angry about is, is Nebraska better than the record? Damn right there. But you weren't competitive with an 0-6 team.
Yeah.
And that's just, it's very disheartening.
This might be a hot take, but I think they can be competitive with the remaining games on their schedule. That does include a trip out east, right? I think that is a that is a scheme that they can play against. Now, I could maybe convinced otherwise, but that's something that they've done well against is more the power running.
In theory, yes.
Because
again, all the game plan to do it is you're literally going to put 10 in the box,
right?
And say, hey,
beat us through
again,
the air.
And Alex Hornibrook is awful in doing so. So again, maybe that Wisconsin game went from 1% to 3%, but I'm holding my breath. But again, Eric, I mean, what did you think of Tanner Morgan's performance? Again, I thought that he looked prepared, he looked calm, he looked decisive. Minnesota benefited from some things I don't think that the Husker defense was ready for, but what did you think?
Yeah, I thought he looked sharp. That's the first thing is to, you know, judge a guy coming in, does he look confident in control and not missing a beat? And it certainly was that. You know, you can get backup comes in, you can sometimes get a little injection of energy and a guy that's you know, coming off fresh legs, no injuries, not hobbled. And I think they benefited from all that, in addition to some of the scheme things we talked about, maybe Nebraska wasn't ready for. What'll be interesting to me is to see if he does play more, is to see how I think that the offense is going to look a little bit different, specifically in the passing game, you know, as you alluded to.
Maybe we do see these sprint outs and bootlegs right. That we've been clamoring right. for.
Right. I think so. And that we have over the last, to be fair, over the last two games, I think we've seen a little bit more of that from down from zero to mixing in a little more. But I think with Tanner Morgan in there, I think it does look a little bit different. And, you know, in a game where these defenses, I'm not sure, I haven't had enough look at Indiana, but if these defenses are playing press man coverage, it's going to benefit from to get those guys, get that quarterback out of the pocket a little bit, get those guys running around a little bit of scramble drill, extend the play, and hopefully come up with a big play. So that might change the dynamic. But I just wanted to chime in. It's going to be interesting from trying to think of this from the head coach's perspective. I think it's a more difficult decision, however, because you're trying to balance. I know they want to win six games this year, trying to balance that versus whoever your quarterback is going to be, and maybe at this point they do or don't know who that is beyond this season. I know it's important for any head coach to get that quarterback as much experience as possible. So I guess what I'm trying to say is if you're flipping back and forth, good to get two guys experienced to a degree, but if you really feel like you have a guy, whoever that is, that's going to be your quarterback over the next two or three seasons, you want to take a season like this year to get that person as much experience as you can, as many snaps as you can, looking at it, as many defenses as you can. So it's going to be a balance between that and maybe a guy who's a little bit fresher and looks a little bit sharper, maybe has a little bit better chance to get you to six wins. It could be interesting to see how they handle that.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that one thing that we haven't touched on and probably should is the special teams. I think this is probably one of their better outings as a special teams unit. Jacob Herbers was, you know, if we're doing the Jekyll and Hyde, he was top notch on Saturday. That probably his best performance. Yeah, I think arguably that is his best performance of the season.
I don't think you get any argument from me on that one.
Yeah. How many did he have inside the 20? I don't have the stats up in front of me. I know he had a 65-yarder. His average was over 40. I don't have the stats in front of me. I'm sorry. That was really dumb.
Before I tell you the answer to that, Luke, okay. We do have to take one final break here to talk about the Goal Line Club. We mentioned this. We're recording Saturday. But what time does the GLC tailgate registration close?
It closes on first
Friday night game.
Yeah, but first there's the preview that closes on a Monday at 1 p.m. So if you want to go to the preview event, that's a Monday at 1 p.m. And then if you want to go to the tailgate, that's Tuesday at 1 p.m. October 23rd. So make sure that you get in and get registered for that because you do need to register prior to the event.
And then, as I mentioned, we've harped on it for seemingly weeks here. It's your last opportunity to do it. If you do want to come out to TCF Bank Stadium on Friday to support the offense, the defense, whatever you want to do to support this Gopher team, come on down to the GLC tailgate, 4 p.m. doors open, same time as with the tailgate lots open. Again, no setup. You can come straight from work. There's no hassle involved. All you can drink. You have a meal ticket. It's inside if it's a little bit chilly. So if you have, you know, you're looking for something, you know, your better half wants to go, but she doesn't want to be outside in the cold tailgating before you guys head on over to TCF Bank Stadium. It's right in front of Williams Arena. It's indoors. It's heated. You can do all the different types of things. So if you want to learn more, go to goalineclub.org.
All right, so back to special teams. Herbers was six punts on the day. He only averaged 41 yards. This stat doesn't give me inside the 20, but, man, he seemed to have almost all those inside the 20. He had a 41-yard average with a long of 58. Do you know how many he had inside the 20, Ryan, by chance?
I'm loading it right now. Four. But regardless, I mean,
he was good.
He was good. I mean, it sucks for him that it really didn't matter on the day because he has this six punts, 41 average. Five of them inside the 20 didn't really matter. You know,
yeah,
that's just the life of a punter. Now, am I happy that we saw, you know, Dr. Jekyll and not Mr. Hyde today or on Saturday? That is. Yeah. Do I still want to have some sort of consistency? Because I believe the game before that, Herbers was not good at all. I just don't know what I'm getting from Herbers week to week. And then one of the ways that Nebraska could be exploited was in the special teams game. And you saw that where Minnesota beautifully blocks their kickoff return there where, you know, guys like Ben Davis, Julian Huff, Blake Cashman, you saw Mariano Sorey-Marin sprinting 55 yards down the field, gaining on him. Now, do I wish that Mr. Sorey-Marin returned his noggin to the left? Yes, I do, because Demetrius Douglas would have housed it. But you still love to see that kind of effort, especially knowing what the kind of game environment was. Minnesota down three scores. So, again, special teams, Rob Wenger's, you know, units came to play, but in the end, your favorite Linkin Park song of all time, Luke, in the end, it really doesn't matter.
Yeah. Kicking-wise, you know, Emmett Carpenter, 2 for 2. They did have a gaffe as a field goal unit where they didn't get a kickoff in time. I think he did end up making that, if I'm not mistaken. Or maybe he didn't. Maybe it was short. I can't remember, mostly because it didn't matter. But that's a gaffe that they would have liked to have back. But otherwise, I mean, a special teams perspective, I thought that they played well. Yeah, so before we close out, I guess just one more question for you, Derek. You know, going forward, what do you see as success for this Gopher squad in 2018? They're now 3-4. They're 0-4 in the Big Ten. How can we look at this season as ultimately being successful? You having actually played for the Gophers, you know, as a locker room, obviously you want to make strides week in and week out. But for you, what is going to be success going forward for this 2018 squad?
Well, I feel like this is the time of year that we start having our trajectory talk, which is, you know, heading into November. You know, teams are often evaluated on what their trajectory is heading into the final month. Are they on the rise? Are they sliding? And I guess I'm of the opinion that teams that are down on talent, and especially down when you consider injuries, this is when they tend to slide, is going into the end of the year. So long answer to your question, but I think success looks like improvement in this last month. I don't know what that means, wins and losses. I think for the record, you know, beginning of the year, I would have had this team at six and a half wins, I think would be considered success. And that's not revisionist history. It's an honest opinion. So from win-loss perspective, if they can get six and go to a bowl game, I think that's at this point a success. But beyond the wins and losses, I think, again, it's your how you finish the season, your trajectory, and that's going to set the tone, especially in that last game or two. I think that sets the tone for the following year, if not that first game, just helping build things. And, you know, look at it. That might be even more important with a team like Minnesota that's going to have the number of guys coming back that they are. You know, they're you know, the number of guys that are playing now, they're going to be back next year, is extremely high. So I think success is getting some of these things shored up. Being competitive in every game, I think, is important from a fan perspective. You know, it's demoralizing to not be in the game, especially early. So being competitive in every game, get six wins in a bowl game, I think that's still success.
Now, Luke, for the record, you look back at our season predictions. I am 7-0 in my season predictions here so far.
No way.
I predicted. Yeah, it's still on tape, and it's still on Gopher Illustrated back in August. I thought it was 3-0 non-conference, four straight losses, and then we came into Indiana, and I thought that Minnesota got a victory on Friday. Now, I have not looked at any kind of statistics and what kind of, you know, offense Indiana runs, but there's still, you know, still hope. But the issue is, for that there to be anything resembling hope, there are two things. Offensively, we'll start with the positive. If you haven't watched this Gopher offense and thought the last couple of weeks or the last 3 weeks that there is a lot of reasons to be optimistic, you're not looking hard enough, you're choosing to look and choosing to not want to look. Because the offensive line with Fall Ely in there has played much better in the run, played much better against the pass. You've seen the Gopher tight ends block much better in the month of October than they have in the month of September. You're seeing them grow and develop there. You're seeing Rashad Bateman and Chris Ottman-Bell starting to figure it out. Tyler Johnson's had monster games here three of the last four. The quarterback position, we'll see how it plays going forward, and then we'll see if Shannon Brooks is back for Indiana or not. Again, we'll see what the legal situation is when we record the preview podcast, but offensively, I think this offense is on the upward trajectory, which should make you happy, because these are guys that are going to be here next year in 19. The guys that are playing well are going to be here in 20, and some are going to even be here in 2021. But it's all for naught if the defense continues to be a sieve. We're looking at this Gopher offense. They've given up over 2,000 total yards in Big Ten play. 2,000. It's over 500 a game, 43 points a game. It gets even worse if you go back and look at 2017. So the question that I'm going to be looking for progress on this defense is, Rob Smith, you and your defensive staff, can you show any sign of life? Can you show any sign of willing to deviate from what's not working? Because it's clear what you've done the last 4 weeks in Big Ten play, it ain't been working. And as I said, if you continue to do the same thing game after game after game and expect different results, what are you doing?
Isn't that the definition of insanity? Like, doing the same thing and expecting a different result?
Yes. That is the exact definition, Luke. And that's why it is insane to me that Minnesota continues to play off coverage, continues to try to keep everything in front of them, not bringing pressure, saying, if you're going to beat us, well, you're going to beat us in front of us. Well, damn it, Rob, they're beating you, and they're beating you in front of us. They're beating you behind us. I just want to see something different. Show me a different look. Show me some different personnel. Because if not, I mean, it is, you still have three home games left, boy. It is going to be people that are showing up to support the offense, and it's going to be bad on defense. And if, you know, if Minnesota's defense continues to play the way that they have been with all these upperclassmen, you're going to hear a lot of boos on Friday night. You look at the two November home games coming up. These guys aren't playing well. So then you need to figure out why they're not playing well, fix it, and then have them just play average. Like, if we saw this defense just play average, I mean, you're going to be competitive with Indiana. You're going to beat Illinois. Like, here's the thing. Friday night is, I think, the tipping point of the season, because you have Illinois still in the docket. Can you show up at home? Can the defense figure it out at home? This is still an Indiana team that has scored some points, but they're on a three-game losing streak as well. This is not a team coming to TCF Bank Stadium on Friday night that has a lot of confidence right now. Did they play Penn State tough? Sure. The close only counts in horseshoes and hand grenades. Minnesota's on a four-game losing streak. Who wants to show up and end their losing streak? You'd hope it's this Minnesota team Friday night. I can assure you, with Halloween, this is essentially the Halloween game for the students. They're going to come out. I can assure you they're going to be very beveraged up, and they're going to be ready to go. So is the defense going to show signs of life, show signs of progress, show signs of change? And PJ always likes to talk about growth with Roe being capitalize. Well, are you going to show anything defense? I mean, that's the thing that I'm going to be looking for from this defensive staff, is show me a game plan that you're willing to adjust to. Show me a game plan that you're willing to deviate from, because Kirk Schrock is doing it on the offensive side of the ball, yet it seems like it's being a very, very stubborn kind of game plan defensively.
All right. So I think that'll pretty much wrap it up for us. I want to thank everyone for listening to the podcast. Again, I want to thank our sponsor, the Goal Line Club. If you're interested in anything there, go to goalineclub.org, their website. If you enjoy the podcast, please rate and review. We appreciate you listening, and go Gophers.
You ain't heard about Moto Casino? Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto. I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps, in line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino. Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free-to-play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today. Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Cleveland is where the urban meets the outdoors, where cultural celebrations meet rabid sports fans meet the symphony, where nobody goes hungry and everybody loves music. Fueled by passion, we are the land for life. From rich history to hidden gems, the Legends of the Land podcast shares the real stories from real Clevelanders that shaped the city. From iconic chefs to grassroots changemakers, sports heroes to creative visionaries, learn why living all out is in Cleveland's DNA. Go to thisisCLE.com/podcast.